Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
As is my habit, I want to review a little bit. Last week, we continued to look at the deceased psychic Sylvia Brown's book, End of Days, and some of her prophets, people that she considered prophets, Edgar Casey, Madame Blavatsky, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, as well as some contemporary false prophets and date setters. Last week, I actually signed off with a little humor. I said, I predict that unless the Lord takes us home, I'm going to be here next week, and I hope you will join me. Of course, I was joking, not really making any predictions. But, of course, he could take you or I home via the rapture or death. So, wow, what a way to go, especially if it came during the podcast, huh? But anyway, I'm not making any predictions, all right? So, continuing in my series, we're looking at Sylvia Brown's book, End of Days. This is a segue from an article that I will return to later as we continue to look at some of this information from her book. I hope you're finding this educational in some ways if you're not aware of some of the ways Satan deceives and uses counterfeit prophecy, counterfeit prophets, psychics, etc. And I just thought it was a good study to do. And this is a good book to use. Now, this book was written in 2008. And we're going to look today at Chapter 6, among other things. We're going to look at doomsday cults. And I have some comments that I would like to say here. Brown warned rightly of doomsday cults. But basically, she was the equivalent of a false prophet herself. And so, you know, I always say sometimes you need to pick your poison. I think her description of these doomsday-type cults is pretty accurate. But pick your poison. Doomsday cults or psychic and occultic leaders like her. It's a lose-lose proposition either way, I'll tell you. But anyway, we will look at some of the comments that she made. And now, so without further ado, let me just jump right in here. We are going to Chapter 6, Doomsday Cults from End of Days. Now, she says that Doomsday Cults members are awfully intensely devout believers in God, Jesus, the Bible, and the concept of Armageddon, or we might say in counterfeit gods, Jesus's, the Bible, the concept of Armageddon, etc. You get the idea. Satan has all types of counterfeits that he uses. And but it's also possible that there could be true believers who are temporarily sidetracked into cults, whether they be doomsday cults or otherwise. And so she makes a good point there that they're awfully intensely devout believers in God, Jesus, the Bible, the concept of Armageddon, preceded by the arrival of a Christ-like Messiah. They tend to be inherently honest and well-intentioned, making it much more difficult for them to imagine that the charismatic, equally devout, biblical expert who's trying to recruit them is actually a deceptive, manipulative sociopath who uses God, Jesus, and the Scriptures as nothing but props and lures. Again, you know, these groups, they're designed to give God and true Bible prophecy, not true Bible prophets, true Bible prophecy, which, of course, contains Bible prophets in the written canon of Scripture. But, you know, the world can't tell the difference between the tares and the wheat. Jesus used the parable of the wheat and the tares, and the idea is that when the wheat and the tares in the Holy Land, when they grew up together, they were hard to distinguish which was a wheat and which was a tare, a wheat or a weed, in other words, because at certain stages of growth, they looked identical. It was only till later in growth that you could see the difference. And so, you know, the world can't really tell the difference. Now, so she goes on to say, once the aspiring cult leader has the attention of potential recruits, he'll usually fall into variations on a pattern of behavior that would be almost laughably predictable if it weren't so destructive. He'll claim that his personal theology is in unique possession of the truth, unlike traditional religions that are full of contradictions and hypocrisy. Of course, the same thing could be said about psychics, New Agers, people like Mrs. Brown, Sylvia Brown, that her theology is in the unique position of truth. She didn't have a doomsday cult going, don't get me wrong, but she had a cult-like following of people who believed her misinterpretations, redefinitions, and deceptions, false predictions, etc. It says he'll also make claims that can't possibly be proven or disproven, that he's routinely receiving special orders and insights from God, and that he's a reincarnated Messiah or prophet, that God has assigned this mission specifically to him, and most certainly that he and he alone can guide his most faithful followers safely into God's arms when the inevitable apocalypse comes, while the sinful non-believers on earth perish. As a test of devotion, he'll insist on either tithing from the group or the donation of his followers' earthly possessions and holdings. What more sufficient way to hold people in subtle captivity than to strip them of their resources? True, she makes some good points here, of course. He'll typically have a list of admirable, irresistible group goals on hand that include such humanitarian pursuits as feeding the poor, volunteering in missions and shelters, gathering clothing for the needy, etc. Of course, you know, I would just say that Sylvia Brown approved of the social gospel, which is along the same lines of what she was just describing. And not that I have any problems with feeding the poor and volunteering in missions and shelters, etc. But her view and her ideas were more along the line of the liberal social gospel people who believe that their good works are going to save them and have actually turned the social gospel into a work salvation experience, actually somewhat cultic. Different gospel for sure. As quickly as possible, he'll gather his recruits into some form of communal living situation separate from their families and loved ones, explaining that only by committing their lives to God and him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, can they prove their intention to be cleansed of the sins of society and embrace the pure divine enlightenment that will see them through the end of the world. Okay. Slowly but surely, he'll begin dictating every detail of the lives of his followers. He'll typically start with a stupefying schedule of Bible studies, which are really his own self-serving interpretations of carefully selected passages, none of them subject to questions or debate. And I might add, out of context and redefined interpretations, not unlike her and the New Age psychics that she approves and promotes in her book and calls prophets. An effective us against them mentality will be reinforced with monotonous regularity, so that any interference from such outsiders as family, friends, etc., will be viewed as potentially fatal persecution from the godless heathen. Okay. Now, someone said that even deceivers like Brown, and they didn't mention her by name, of course, will teach a lot of truth to float their lies. And that's what she does here. A lot of the things she's saying is accurate and true concerning these destructive doomsday cults. But while giving you a lot of truth, she's floating her own lies of reincarnation and deification, pantheism, you know, the fact there is no death, just multiple New Age type deceptions that she promotes in her books. It says that, I also might add, there's also another saying, even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? A broken clock, wherever it stops, it's going to be right at that time in the a.m. and in the p.m. Twice a day, even a broken clock is right. So people like Sylvia Brown deceived people, even though they spoke a lot of truth while deceiving with their own brand of untruth. Okay, the good news is that there are some telltale signs of a dangerous doomsday cult leader that make even the most skilled charismatic liars among them relatively conspicuous if you listen closely, pay attention, and think. Any prophet or messiah who claims to have a closer relationship with God than you do is a liar, or at least potentially a liar. Any prophet or messiah who claims you need him or her in order to communicate with God is a liar. Any prophet messiah who claims that only he or she knows the truth of what God has in store for you or for your future or for humankind is a liar. Although psychics will claim to know much of the truth of what God has in store for you, I guess they would say, yes, but I'm not the only psychic that's going to tell you truth about yourself, although I'm sure it's pretty competitive. any prophet messiah who claims it is God's will that you cause harm to yourself, you know, like suicide cults, or to any other living being is a liar. Any prophet messiah who claims to be infallible is a liar. Any prophet or messiah who claims that all those who criticize him or disagree with him are evil and doomed to God's eternal wrath is a liar. Any prophet messiah who demands isolation from those who have consistently loved, supported, and been honest with you is a liar. Any prophet messiah who insists that no one cares about or understands you as much as they do is a liar. And any of these type false messiahs who believe he or she is exempt from the laws of God and society is a liar. Any of these false messiahs whose power is based on fear, abuse, and threats is a liar. And also, in conclusion of this list, any prophet or messiah who claims to be your sole source of salvation when the apocalypse happens is a liar. And so once again, I reiterate, though, pick your poison, you know. You can either choose a doomsday cult or just a regular old run-of-the-mill cult, or you can follow a false predictor, a psychic condemned by the Word of God like Sylvia Brown. But I recommend not choosing poison. I'd say choose the bread of life. That's better for your spiritual nutrition. Now, she gives some examples of doomsday cults, and we're going to look at a couple here. The Heaven's Gate. Some of you may remember the Heaven's Gate. And Heaven's Gate was a doomsday cult founded by Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles. This Marshall Applewhite, now he really was the poster boy for cult leaders with his bulging eyes, you know, because the videos that he made. I mean, you know, if you look up in a dictionary for the definition and a good picture of a cult leader, and particularly a doomsday cult leader, you might find a picture of Marshall Applewhite. Anyway, these two, Bo and Doe, Peep, she was called, they declared themselves extraterrestrials who traveled here from the kingdom of heaven, a story they clearly preferred to the documented fact that they met in a psychiatric hospital where he was a patient and she was a nurse. And I always like to quote that quote, physician, heal thyself. What happened here? But anyway, it looks like the inmates truly were running that asylum, maybe. But seriously, folks, Heaven's Gate actually evolved from a 1975 organization called the Human Individual Metamorphosis. I didn't know that, actually, till I read this, whose members left their loved ones' careers and earthly possessions behind to gather in a desert in Colorado awaiting a UFO that never came. Boy, that sounds familiar. This group evolved into Total Overcomers Anonymous, formed by Doe, and that's Marshall Applewhite, after Bonnie's death from cancer in 1985, and united in Doe's apocalyptic belief that the Earth's population was about to be recycled. That group evolved into Heaven's Gate when Doe relocated them to San Diego in the mid-90s. And I may add, I may not add, let me just move on here. Doe taught his followers that our souls are separate, superior entities that temporarily take up residence in our bodies, and that our soul's separation from our bodies is the final act of metamorphosis. And I would just say, these are my comments, that how is that belief really any better than Sylvia Brown's belief in reincarnation? Kind of different, but definitely no better, in my opinion. Anyway, his soul, by the way, had once resided in the human body we know as Jesus Christ, of course, after traveling here in a spaceship 2,000 years ago. The extraterrestrial beings who travel throughout the universe in those spaceships are on a mission to elevate humanity's level of knowledge, which is why Doe referred to extraterrestrials as the level above human. The purpose of Heaven's Gate Gates members was to prepare themselves to enter the kingdom of heaven, believing as they did that they were separate from and superior to the evil forces that control earth. Once their preparation was complete, they believed they'd be transported to the kingdom by committing suicide as a group, liberating their souls from their earthly bodies. I very sad, of course. And they're not the first doomsday cult to commit suicide, but very sad. Their souls, after a brief period of sleep, would ultimately be absorbed by a level above human who was waiting for them on board a spaceship that, according to Doe, was hidden behind the comet Hale-Bopp that was passing close to Earth in 1997. I remember listening to the Art Bell show, Coast to Coast show, paranormal program on the radio, and he was tracking that comet, and he was actually claiming or supposedly believing, or maybe he was just passing on information that others were saying, that there was a UFO hiding and traveling behind this comet. So maybe the Heaven's Gate group picked it up from Art Bell's show. Who knows? I remember there was some controversy about that after that mass suicide took place. But anyway, on March 22nd, 1997, shortly after a videotape, a vinyl videotape that was given, and there, that's the one where, as I say, I describe Applewhite as the poster boy for doomsday cults. After it was made, 39 members of Heaven's Gate, including Doe, Applewhite, lay down on mattresses in their immaculate San Diego house and killed themselves with a mixture of phenobarbital and vodka. When I first saw that word immaculate, I actually misread it, and I thought it said emasculated, because I guess that was in the back of my mind, because that, of course, is what he required from the males of his cult to do, to emasculate themselves, literally. Now, that's dedication, my friends, and that's a cult. I would be definitely on the lower list of cults that I would want to join. Not that I want to join any of them, or am I recommending such to you, but I don't know if you remember that that fact, that that's what he required. So anyway, moving right along, all the deceased were also found, and this is interesting, I'd never heard this, all the deceased were also found with their identification in their pockets, as well as a $5 bill and three quarters. An astute columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle subsequently unearthed a quote from Mark Twain that seems as if it must be more than just an unfortunate coincidence. Apparently Mark Twain said, "The fare to get to heaven on the tail of a comet was $5.75. Wow, what an e-ticket ride for only $5.75. Anyway, very strange. Task completed is part of the suicide note. Tragically and needlessly, to escape the imminent recycling of life on Earth that proved to be nothing more than the manipulative rhetoric of a man who clearly thought the purpose of having power was to abuse it. And I might add, there were several doomsday cults around the turn of the millennium, which is not surprising. And there was a whole lot of crazy stuff going on, and there were other mass suicides. But this is one that she picked out that that we have a chance to look at. Now, let's look at the Branch Davidians. That's the only other doomsday cult I want to look at that she mentions here. In the early 19th century, a man named William Miller founded a group called the Millerites. Among other things, the Millerites predicted that the end of the world, heralded by the second coming of Jesus Christ, would occur on October 22, 1844. When that date came and went, fairly uneventfully, October 22, 1844 came to be known to the Millerites, understandably, as the Great Disappointment. The Millerites picked several more end-of-the-world dates, all based on their interpretation of certain biblical passages. And it's funny how that happens. I mentioned Edgar Wisenet, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He did that when his first numerical year was wrong. He just chose another year. Oops, made a miscalculation. And, I can't remember his name, but another date setter in our lifetime who died not too long ago, did the same thing. He predicted it. He was actually the head of the American Family Radio. Scary, you know. I mean, actually good programming on a lot of that programming. So how in the world did that? Well, you know what they say. Like I quoted earlier, the inmates are running the asylum, and somehow that particular man, and his name escapes me. I wish I could remember his name. Some of you will know who I'm talking about. But he falsely predicted date set and then set another date, just as these folks did. They sort of set the trend, I guess, here back in the mid-1800s here. It says when those dates proved to be meaningless, as had October 22nd, 1844, the membership of the Millerites declined significantly. Well, at least William Miller gave it up at that point, from what I understand. Several members, though, persisted in their basic belief in an imminent, ultimate battle between good and evil and the second coming of Christ. In 1863, they formed the Seventh-day Adventists, most definitely a church as opposed to a cult. That's her words, not mine, folks. And she says, and still thriving with a current membership of more than 12 million worldwide. I believe they are definitely not a church. I do definitely believe they are a cult. I hope you'll trust me rather than Sylvia Brown on that. And I've done a lot of research and hands-on experience with the Seventh-day Adventists. And my teacher at Bible College of our cults class almost got sucked into that group and made that clear to us as we studied in his class. Anyway, they were, of course, several members persisted in this, as they mentioned. And one of those, of course, key member, Ellen G. White, who, of course, was a false prophetess herself, and continued this works religion cult known as the Seventh-day Adventists. In 1919, a man named, now getting back to the Branch Davidians, of course, I digress often. In 1919, a man named Victor Hautef joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church. But 10 years later, after finding what he perceived to be several flaws in the church and its doctrines, he left to form his own sect, the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists, which ultimately evolved into the Branch Davidians. It was in 1935 that Hautef bought land for his Davidian Adventists outside of Waco, Texas, and named the settlement the Mount Carmel Center. One day in 1981, a 22-year-old dyslexic high school dropout and failed rock star named Vernon Howell joined the Branch Davidians in Waco. By 1990, he'd staged a heavily armed takeover of the Mount Carmel Center. What could possibly go wrong here, folks? Became leader of the Branch Davidians and changed his name to David Koresh. As he explained to his congregants, David came from his being the reigning ruler of the biblical house of David, and Koresh was the Hebrew form of the name Cyrus, the king of Persia, who freed the Jewish prisoners in Babylon so they could return to Israel. David Koresh taught that he was the Messiah, the second coming the Branch Davidians had been anticipating since their inception, God's messenger who would personally trigger the apocalypse and then guide his followers safely to salvation. In his tediously repetitive marathon Bible studies, he instilled belief that he would be leading his flock into violent battle with the U.S. government that would mark the end of the world and his followers' passage to eternal lives. Wow. And it happened not that long ago. Anyway, perhaps as a testament to David Koresh's final maniacal insistence on total control over his own and his followers' destiny, the catastrophic fire that consumed the compound, according to FBI wiretaps, appeared to have been set, apparently by them, so in a way he was absolutely prophetic. He predicted the end of the world and then played his part in seeing to it that all those people who trusted him and all those innocent children who had no choice about it at all. Somehow I think the Branch Davidians expected more and better from their long-awaited Messiah. But you know, this is my comment. This is sort of how, and I've said this before, this is sort of how the demons make their attempts. They attempt to make self-fulfilled prophecies by working invisibly behind the lines. This is how they also supposedly, through psychics, have knowledge that no one but the psychic or the dead person could know, because they've studied people's lives, they've seen the person that the psychic, that the person going to the psychic is looking for information about their dead loved ones, and so the demons, they can make these self-fulfilling prophecies come true sometimes. Sometimes they can't, but it really makes the psychics look like they know what they're talking about and that they're in tune with the divine source or with dead relatives or whatever, which in reality they're in tune with fallen angels, demonic deceivers who are bringing doctrines of demons and deceptions, which the Bible, of course, has warned us about. Now, at this time, I have a little bit of time left. I want to list some other well-known false prophecy cults. Of course, we just mentioned the Seventh-day Adventists. And, of course, then there's the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Herbert W. Armstrong splinter groups, you know, the World Tomorrow. They always call themselves Church of God is at the end of their particular group. They always claim to be led by a prophet. And they all have sought to replace Herbert W. Armstrong, who claimed to be the prophet. New Age groups, of course, are examples of prophecy cults or religions. The New Apostolic Reformation groups, those who claim that their apostles and prophets are to be believed even above the scriptures themselves, because they're prophets, right, or apostles. And then, you know, and of course, which makes them a lot like the psychics that people go to. And the interesting thing, even the Mormons, whose leader is known as the prophet, and who, you know, who have false prophecies throughout their history. There are spinoff groups, as we've seen with the Seventh-day Adventists, the Branch Davidians, and there's spinoff groups from Armstrong's groups and the Jehovah's Witness groups. And so there's a whole host of people out there, victims falling for so-called prophecy-oriented or even Bible prophecy-oriented cults who are not giving you true Bible prophecy. And this, of course, plays into Satan's hands as he wants people to not study the 25 or 30% of God's Word that consists of fulfilled prophecy or future prophecy so that you might be comforted, so that you might know what's coming, so that you might warn others, you know, of the wrath to come. And how that they might know salvation through Jesus Christ. The price has been paid, and it's not through your works or any cult's works. It's through the finished work of Jesus Christ. So I'm going to end here. Next week we will hopefully wrap up our look at her book, and we hope that you'll keep looking at God's book. I plan on doing that, and I hope you'll join us next week. God bless you all. Good night.